Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. I'm not ready to make nice. I'm not ready to back down. I'm still mad as hell and I don't have time to go round and round and round. It's too late to make it right. I probably wouldn't if I could. Cause I'm mad as hell. Can't bring myself to do what it is you think I should. I know. Today we are taking a virtual trip to Virginia. We are going to meet Becky Harris, who is not only the American Crafts Spirits Association president, but also one of the co-founders and chief distiller of Catoctin Creek Whiskey. So yeah, we've got lots to talk about because there's been lots of movement in both of those places. So not only is this a fun one about doing the farm to glass thing, Virginia style, it's also about, what's happening in the small crafts world. You know, the pandemic has been really tricky during this time for a lot of these smaller brands that found their footing in bars, and so many bars have been closed or have had to change the way they do their inventory that these smaller brands are having to find other ways to get their names out there. So sit down, pull up a drink, or not, that's up to you, and take a listen. There's definitely stuff to learn here. And the last time I went to Virginia, a lobster tried to attack me. I thought it was sitting in a batch of ice. It jumped over the bar and came at me. I don't hold this against Virginia, though. I really would love to go back and especially visit the Catoctin Creek Distillery. Check that out. But let's sit down with Becky now. Becky Harris, coming up.
Exactly, exactly. So I always like to start these things just, you know, introduce yourself and what you do and all of that. So go for it.
All right. Is it on right
We're on.
Now?
We are recording. Okay. This is all audio, so no one gets to see audio.
Thank goodness, because I didn't even put on lipstick.
I always dress up on Fridays for my work meetings because
that's
it helps
nice.
Me feel a little human.
You know, it's nice to have something to dress up for.
Right.
I have I had two conferences this week, so I had to, wash my hair.
Well, my hair is all pinned up right now. It's under disguise because if it was down, I'm probably forming dreadlocks at this point. I'm trying not to. But it's wavy enough and it's getting so long and split endy that it's just,
You're just like, yeah.
I was all, I can do this and it's completely acceptable. Nobody
it
knows.
Is. got that pandemic look.
Yeah, exactly. But during the pandemic, you've been productive. So let people know what you're up to.
Don't have much choice.
Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead and introduce yourself.
All right. So, I'm Becky Harris. Mm-hmm. I'm the founder and chief distiller at Catoctin Creek Distillery. We make Virginia rye whiskey. And I'm also president of the American Craft Spirits Association.
And a lot going on in both places.
Yes. It was not actually all that I thought it was going to be. It turned out to be about twice what I thought it was going to be.
That's always the case. Now, tell me again the name of the ride, because I just say it for me, because it's one of those ones that tongue twists for me.
Yes, it is. It's always Catoctin. Catoctin. If you put the accent on the second syllable, you will say it right.
Where did that name come from?
It's a regional name. So the Catoctin Mountains are in Maryland. Mm-hmm. And that's where Camp David is. And there's a Catoctin Creek that flows through Maryland, and there's a Catoctin Creek that flows through Virginia. And we're right next to the Catoctin Creek in Virginia.
Oh, that's awesome. Very cool. I figured it was something like that. I mean, I have family in Pennsylvania, and that's how I learned to say Susquehanna.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. Otherwise, that was a word that would have really troubled me for quite some time as well.
Oh, we always have to, you know, we always have to tell people how to say it.
And, yeah.
You know, it was like, oh, in retrospect, perhaps it wasn't the best move, but
well,
you are.
When, tell me the story of how you got into this. I mean, how did you come to be making rye?
So my husband likes to say that government contracting taught him a love of drinking.
And yep.
That, you know, on the 25th revision of a proposal that he knew they weren't going to get, he was, you know, thinking back to when he was in high school and he worked in a winery, and it was the most fun because he was doing stuff. He wasn't just at a computer doing whatever. Mm-hmm. He was doing physical things. Mm-hmm. And he, but there were like 40 wineries just right near where we are, because our area is kind of like the wine area outside of DC. And in the meantime, he had learned to love spirits. And so he came to me. I'm a chemical engineer. I've worked in companies. We've done things from making polystyrene foam plates and trays and cups to contact lenses to copper nickel plating on plastics. So when Scott was like, I want to do a distillery, I'm like, well, I could probably learn to make whiskey because it can't be that darn hard. Contacts are really hard. And, but, you know, can you make money making whiskey? Mm. Well,
yeah, that is the challenge.
That's a good question. Yeah. So I said, you know, at the time I was getting ready to get back into the workforce, my kids were getting like out of elementary school. And I was like, well, you know, if we do this, I wouldn't have to commute right away. And so I told him to write a business plan. I figured he'd talk himself out of it. And he almost did. But we came around and looked like we had something that was like, okay, if we take everything we've saved and we, you know, put it into starting this up, and I work for nothing, but that was okay because, you know, we were kind of used to me not earning anything. Mm-hmm. Right then, Scott would keep his day job and we could give this a shot. And I figured if it goes to shit, I hope
we can absolutely swear on this. Yeah. We were talking about booze. Swearing is inherent.
If it goes to shit, then all we do is we just both get jobs, which is what we could do anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you lose savings, but you only live once. So
yeah.
We kind of gave it a shot. And that was in 2009 was the year we set up. In 2010, we started production, January 2010.
So it's been just over 10 years then for you guys that you've been doing this. And that's amazing. And so you're the distiller.
Mm-hmm.
Then as well.
Yes.
You guys
I kind of lead the group now.
Yeah.
I have a couple other, you know, I have a team. We have three people right now on the production team other than myself, who, you know, do the day-to-day. So my job is, you know, kind of keeping everything moving, creating the plan, and then kind of creating special releases and, you know, private barrels that we can sell to people and all those kind of things, and, you know, kind of keep everything rolling along.
Well, you know, the other thing is that, you know, you are talking about having an engineering background, you know, mm-hmm. basically this kind of thing. So I can see the building of all of this, like, okay, what kind of stills do we need and all of that. But then there's also the palate side of it, and you're coming into it with that.
It's interesting you say that, but like my part, best part of engineering has never been about the machines. I really actually don't like dealing with things that don't work or are broken or, you know, it's like, I will make the machine do whatever I want it to do. So my side of it is really more the process part. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like given whatever I have to work with, I can make it work. Mm-hmm. But I really don't, I don't like buying equipment. I don't like figuring out if it fits and all that stuff. So I tend to work more on the process side. So I do like the palette part. I like the part where, you know, what can I do creatively with this? How can mm-hmm. I combine, you know, my whiskey with some other barrel to make something that's a little different for someone, you know, the kinds of things we do with brandies and things like that. All that's fun. And,
yeah. Cause you guys have, you know, recently, I think I saw someone posting the apple brandy that you guys have.
We just had a New York Times article on, they just did a big one on apple brandy. So we were in there.
Yeah. So besides the rise, what else do you guys offer? Because I feel like there are other things that are escaping me right now.
Yeah,
where I was surprised to see them.
We have a gin, that we pretty much distribute pretty widely. So the three rye and the gin are the big four that we, you know, are they're always in stock. Mm-hmm. Those are always going to be available. The, then we do, brandies that are local collaborations. So we have an apple brandy, a peach brandy, a pear brandy, and a Virginia brandy.
Wow.
And so that's from grapes. And so we do, the pear brandy was the first brandy we did. Mm-hmm. That was a collaboration with a local vintner, and he had made pear wine. And when we first bought our very first still, we needed something to test it with. Mm. And so we called Doug, because Doug is like the godfather of most of the wineries around here. He's just a lovely lovely human being. Mm-hmm. And I called him up and said, hey, you know, you said to call you if we need anything. Yes, but you have something we can distill. And he said, yeah, I have a drum of pear wine. I'll bring it over.
Wow.
And we hung around and we got it going and we tasted it. And he said, you know, Scott said to him, what do we owe you? You know, what is it? He's like, no, this, let's just let this be the beginning of working together for the next 50 years.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
And so every year we tag in and he's like, what do you need, you know, this year? And he's one of those people who he likes to say that he made a career out of never letting fruit hit the ground. He knows people everywhere. And if they have too much fruit, he'll find someone who needs fruit. And he moves things around and doesn't let things go to waste.
That's amazing. I mean, that's especially in this day and age when more people are becoming conscious of that sort of thing. You know,
yes, he's been doing it for so long because, you know, he's been basically bootstrapping his, you know, his winery, and he has some, and it's really a testament. A few years ago, he lives on this plot where it's like there's some low spots. Mm-hmm. And I think it was probably 3 or 4 years ago that he had a frost and it just took everything out, like 75% of his crop.
Yeah.
And everybody in the county knows him and they all siphoned off fruit to keep to him. So because, you know, it goes around. And so they're all, you know, they're all farmers helping each other. And so it was really nice. And that's just
say, it sounds like there's a good community around you.
Very much. Yes.
Which is really great. You know, for something like this, you know, you're the neighborhood distillery, as it were.
yes. We're the first one in the area. And so it's been, you know, we're cut with brandies. I like to see it as we are a customer for them. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, you know, will have excess fruit, whether it be grapes or apples or pears or peaches. And the nice thing is that, you know, we've gotten to the point where we can make it so, hey, if you if you charge me bulk prices of this, I can make a little money. You making money. As long as we're both making money, then we can keep this project going. Mm-hmm. You know, because none of these brandies are selling huge amounts. Mm-hmm. That's not the nature of American brandy, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. You know, for 10 years, they've been saying, oh, next year, it's brandy's year. And, you know, it'll be the hot thing. And it's like, yeah. Sure,
yeah, well. It's a side project. It's a side project. Yeah. Well, it looks like it's putting, you know, the fruit to good use, you know, and it's there. So that's a good thing. It sounds like you've been able to do some really interesting collaborations. And that was something else that I don't even remember how it came to my attention. I work in the music industry by day. You can see I've got posters behind me on the wall. And I heard about the Guar collab. And I was like, wait, what? I'm already familiar with this, you know, this company, you know, these spirits. So how is this coming into being? So you've got to tell me about that. That's a story, I'm sure. They came down from their spaceship and
basically, right?
It's like, how does one land? Yeah. There were buckets of blood. It was like The Shining. Boom. This is how you work with Guar. Boom. So I'm sure you have some sort of, that is happening still, right? Or
yes,
did it happen
yes,
already?
It's on the intergalactic metalhead time. So,
they're so perfect.
We had said February, and I really don't know that that's going to still be February because art comes when art comes.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, but I will say that the, you know, we have a fun collaborative whiskey that we came up with that is something different, something I've never done before. And they've gotten some tremendous artwork that they're doing, you know, the collaboration
the
on the label is really cool. There's some special things we're gonna do as far as, you know, the rest of the bottle and stuff. So it's gonna be really amazing. Small community in some ways, and the bar community, because of DC being kind of you know, a lot of the bar community DC was very much in like the punk scene.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and Guar is punk.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so
performance punk.
Yeah, like, you know, bloody punk, I don't know. Yeah. But it kind of came out of that punk scene. And so it's interesting because we probably kind of came to their attention via a couple different ways. You know, there's been a lot of whiskey collaborations over the past 5 years, and I think wine and music collaborations, mm-hmm. you know, so there's mm-hmm. been interest in it. And I think that it kind of came our way through a couple different routes. You know, there are some whiskey people who do a lot of work with different bands. And then there's, you know, the bartender groups in DC who know some of the members of Guar. And so, you know, it's like Guar being their human alter egos being Virginians, they found that to be an interesting way to kind of try to think about what they wanted to do. And so it came out and we tasted through some just some general things that I had, some of the kind of private barrels that I did, but you know, with the size of the release they wanted to do, mm-hmm. I had to kind of flip that because I mm-hmm. needed to get more than what I could do with these onesie cuties. So I kind of did some experiments with some like using the staves to kind of finish the rye in a different way and go with some, you know, cherry and maple and some of the things that would be woods that are, you know, regionally appropriate. So we kind of made a few, I probably did like 4 or 5 different blends of flavors to kind of give them, and they chose one, and so that's kind of where we were going with it. But it's been fun. It was fun to have them come out, and you know, our puppy did not like Lothar at all. He was like, I don't know what this is. It is not right.
I remember seeing a picture, and honestly, it's like I think I saw Gore once in the 90s, maybe, for the novelty of the thing. I have some friends who are absolutely, you know, worship at the altar of Gore. Yes. And I understand why. Great for them. But I couldn't tell you like who's who or what's what. I just know that they're these big alien monsters and stuff. Yeah, right. And and I think, didn't you guys have maybe on your Instagram, or I don't remember if it was website or something, like a picture of you and your husband with
Lothar.
It was Lothar. I figured it must have been Lothar if your puppy was like, no. Just no.
Not happening.
He's like, I am too little to absorb that this is coming for my parents right now.
Yes, exactly. That's, it was just not happening.
That is hilarious. Hilarious. Uh-huh. But does that kind of thing inspire you, though? Like, you've done collaborations before, but, like, you know, this is a Music and Booze podcast, so we got to talk about music a little bit, too.
Right, right.
So you have to have some, like, if you like a fantasy collab for you, who would you love to collaborate with on it?
I don't even, you know, it's funny because to me, what's interesting about it is I actually really liked listening to a huge variety of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I'm usually not the one who like turns on the music, because I just kind of like to see what other people want to play, because that's kind of how I find new things mm-hmm. to listen to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I really enjoy that part. So for, you know, it's like, I forget what it was. I was laughing yesterday because Peter, one of the distillers, he's like one of those guys who whistle all the time. And he's like, while he's working, he's like doing, One of my other distillers likes to put on Irish talk radio because he's Irish. And so it's like he listens to RTE Radio 1.
Wow.
And they have a very eclectic playlist. Mm-hmm. And then at some point it's all talk. Well, Peter started whistling, and and all of a sudden it was like total eclipse of the heart. So then I was like, okay, we're going to start. So I put it on like Pandora and just said play that, and it was hilarious. We were all like, it was all power ballads, and we were just laughing,
and you're like, this is doing it for us today.
Yeah, today is a power ballad day, you know. Other days, you know, there it could be something else, it could be, you know, country or whatever, but it was a power ballad day, which was pretty hilarious.
I love that.
I haven't listened to that in a long time. And yeah, my kids are, you know, my youngest son is, he's, you know, very much into hip hop. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoy a lot of what he listens to. And, you know, my elder son is a pop kid, loves all mm-hmm. kinds of pop, from, you know, old Chicago all the way up to, you know,
whatever is happening now.
Whatever is happening now. So it's always been interesting to, you know, kind of hear, and they share stuff with me, and I really enjoy it.
So you really are getting it from all sides.
Like, I get it from all sides. When we first started the company, one of our first employees loved metal, and also was metal all day. You know, metal all day. So I knew, could sing along with all the metal if I wanted to at that point.
Well, actually, that makes me think. I feel that what comes to mind for me first when I hear about a whiskey music collaboration is, I tend to think it tends to be metal, right off the top of my head. Metal or maybe country.
Yeah.
It seems like the hip hop and Latin stars go to vodka.
Or tequila.
It's like, you know, oddly, the collaborations that come to mind for me with tequila are actors.
Yeah, it is true, too. Yeah, a lot of actors thing. There. They all want to get
Clooney
theirs.
Thing, the Breaking Bad guys, yeah, you know, doing yeah, mezcal.
It's true. Well, which you know, is interesting. It was funny because, you know, as far as the, you know, you're very right about the metal kind of thing because you look across it and it's almost, I mean, across yeah. the board. It's
like, what, Metallica? Don't they have their whiskey
Metallica
or something?
And
I'm like, who else? I know there's more. I feel like it's metal and I'm just spacing on it right now.
Oh, so. Slipknot just did one.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Yeah. Well, it was actually funny because we had some feedback from some of the marketing people that we knew were like, oh, are you sure this is appropriate for your brand? and it was just kind of like... It's like you don't take it too seriously.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, exactly. When you try to describe it to someone who isn't aware of them, you're like, well, they do these shows and there's lots of blood and there's costumes. That could be very daunting to some people.
Yes, exactly. It's like you're like, well, and I mean, you know, and you go to some of the lyrics and, you know, they're trying to push every single button they could. And it's kind of like, but... Yeah, well, and it was funny though because my husband was saying that what struck him about it was that it felt like this one felt like a Gen X collaboration because so many people. Yeah. He's like, he had, you know, it's funny because like every single piece of feedback has been like, oh my God, I love them, and it's. You know, it's like they kind of crossed up, but it's all people of that Gen X kind of time period where they are not really, you know, everything is, all the marketing wisdom is about millennials and
true,
you know, and Gen Z. And, but, you know, their Gen X is right now at a place where they're generally starting to look for those kind of things.
Yeah. Well, we Gen X types, cause I am of that era as well. It's kind of like, you know, we're always quiet about it. We just appreciate it when it's there.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll be like, oh, that's awesome. But, you know, it's not like we always get all the love as
folks. We're used to it. Remember? We were the latchkey kids. We're used to it. But I roll back to what I was asking before. You've got to have, like, let's just say if you could work with any, you know, any musician you could work with to create a whiskey, there's got to be at least a person or two that come to mind for you. Just for the fun of it, you know, something interesting. And maybe it's not metal, or maybe it's some 90s thing. Maybe we're still in our Gen X phase.
It's really hard because for me, it's, you know, it accesses a different part of my brain. as far as the...
use this as an excuse to meet somebody you've always wanted to meet.
Oh, I know. It would be really, I mean, there would be really, really interesting people to meet. And I'm trying to think of, now I'm like, I should have been thinking about this all day. And, you know, trying to come up with somebody specific and interesting. I know who it was. It was actually, I had answered a question about this not long ago, and now it's coming back to me. Missy Elliott.
Ooh, she's a Virginia person.
Exactly.
You could totally make that happen. I was going to say, when you said your son was into hip hop, I'm like, well, you're in the perfect place for it. You know, that whole Virginia Beach scene is just, it has really amazing artists that come out of it. But
Yeah, and it was funny because somebody actually was doing an article, and I can't remember who did it now, but it was something about who would your whiskey be, or something about your brand.
Yeah.
And I said it would be Missy Elliott because, you know, it's kind of forward thinking out there, flipping things, kind of turning it around and being creative.
True. She's ridiculous creative. I mean, I really have so much respect for her. Always have.
Yeah. So there you go. That's mine.
Woohoo! Missy Elliott. That's an excellent answer. I love that. And now I'm like, is she a vodka person?
What is she? I don't know. She may not even drink. Put the pussy on ya, like I told ya. Give me all your numbers so I can phone ya. Your girl acting stank, then call me over. Not on the bed, lay me on your sofa. Call before you come, I need to shave my chocha. You do what you don't, or you will, I won't ya. Go downtown and eat it like a vulture. See my hips and my tips, so cha. See my ass and my lips, don't ya. Lost a few pounds in my whips for ya. This the kind of beat that go ba-ta-ta. Ba-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. Sex me so good, I say blah, blah, blah. Work it, I need a glass of water. Boy, yo, boy, it's good.
We're talking about, you know, your juice, as it were, and you're a small company. You're one of these boutique companies, and you are also you're currently still the president of the American Crafts Association.
Mm-hmm.
So, describe what that's all about, because I'm sure it's taken on kind of a different life during this COVID time.
Oh yeah, it's really interesting. So, you know, one of the things that are in our industry. You know, they're the largest producers who pretty much dominate all the, dominate all the store shelves, right?
Yeah.
The big producers. And now you have about 2,200 small companies that are out there making less than 750,000 gallons a year, right? Mm-hmm. We're making small amounts of product. Most of us, probably 2,000 of the 2,200 are making less than 1,000 cases a year.
Wow.
Probably,
and that's just here in the United States.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
This doesn't count
yes.
these small.
This is just in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's 2,000 of us now. There was about 100 in 2010. So
wow.
It shows how young this movement is. And so, of those smallest ones, most of them sell probably 45 to 50% of their product in their tasting room, out of their, they don't have distribution outside their home state.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to, you know, 80% is right in their home state,
yeah.
out of their front
yeah.
door or in their home state. And so these are the people that are really the future of the industry, because the numbers are just, that's where they need the help. And they are the ones that are kind of like trying to push the envelope and figure out, how do I make my business go in a really, really difficult industry that has been, since Prohibition, basically set up for a small number of companies to do all of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The regulation was there, the taxation was there, and everything was set up that was entirely unfriendly to small businesses doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the vision of the group of founders of the American Craft Spirits Association was that we needed a nonprofit trade association that was, you know, basically owned by the distilling industry and controlled by the distilling industry to advocate for our producers and to say, you know, one of the things, our first projects was, how do we get a form of the federal excise tax, which we pay on whiskey and any spirits? How do we get that so that small producers have to pay less than big producers?
Mm-hmm.
Because in every other alcoholic beverage industry, small producers pay a lower rate than big producers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that took 10 years. We only just got that done permanently. At the end of December, this past
year. Wow. Just this past December that went through.
Yeah, this past December. We had it done in 2016. At the end of 2016, when they put that tax cut through, they gave us a temporary tax break.
Mm-hmm.
But then it only lasted 1 year. So every year we've been fighting to get it permanent.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so we finally got that permanent. So the next big thing is what comes next, and it is a big lift. It is, how do we get direct to consumer shipping, like wineries do, from our distilleries to consumers across the country? You know, in California, being out there, that there are wineries who don't have any distribution.
They just
sell,
yeah.
and they just ship.
Yeah.
To their customers.
I lived in the Bay Area, so I mean, I was what, 45 minutes away from Napa?
Yeah. And, you know, and mm-hmm. when you go out there, you go and what do? You buy it and you have it shipped home. Mm-hmm. You don't want to carry that.
Yeah.
You ship it home. And we always have people multiple times a week, you know, when people are traveling, ask, you know, can I get this shipped? And it's like, no. I'm sorry, we're not allowed to mm-hmm. ship. Mm-hmm. And so when COVID hit and everything kind of shut down, one of the first things in Virginia that our governor, as part of the emergency legislation, mm-hmm. allowed us to ship via common carrier for the first time to people in Virginia.
Okay.
And so that's amazing. And we were able to increase our sales in our tasting room by 40%, you know, throughout the whole year, even when we're down in capacity to probably, you know, 25% or half of, you know, what we're allowed to have.
Uh-huh.
But we're managing to maintain that. And we found that when I looked at the data on that from the state, what really was interesting was that the smallest distilleries were the ones who really leaned into this ability and used that ability as a way to reach out to customers all over the state and give them products and experiences that made them want to buy
mm-hmm.
from them.
Mm-hmm.
And that as part of that, what they also saw was that then their products also did better in the state stores. So if you weren't shipping, you didn't see a bump in the state stores. But if you were direct shipping, your sales store sales also went up by about 30%. Whereas before that, they were up by maybe...
Oh, that's really interesting. 5%. That's really interesting. So, you know, they were able to do the tasting at home.
It's essentially not as much about the shipping as it is a customer relationship
mm-hmm.
tool.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, I'm going to create new things. I'm going to send out, you know, it, and especially a lot of this is like email based, especially.
Yeah.
And you're kind of trying to get those customers who liked you once to come and support you again. And I think that, you know, the distilleries that had a really well tended, you know, customer database of mm-hmm. an email list were the ones that really could reach out and just, you know, really make things happen. So we have probably, I think there are probably 6 or 7 states that are working on legislation this year. Some of the big ones, California has a couple bills going through, New York. There's one in Delaware. There are ones in probably Maine. A lot of little distilleries are looking toward this. And the challenge for our organization as a small organization is that that's going to be a big fight, because you have to go to 50 different state houses basically mm-hmm. to figure this out. And, well, 43, because there are 7 states that already allow it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're made up of small distillers. We are not deep pocketed. So it's definitely going to be a stretch. But what we do have is we are all small businesses. And so when it comes to, you know, really being able to make a message to Congress and to legislators at the state level, it's saying we're small businesses. This is something we need to help
survive
our businesses. And the message, you can't beat it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, that's going to be our project probably for the next
couple of years,
10 years. Yeah.
Well, there's part of me that wonders if this situation that we're in with COVID right now may help in that way. It may be one of the upsides, only in that, you know,
honestly, it opened the door.
Yeah.
Before
because
this, nobody would
yep.
wanted to talk to you about it. Oh, it's dangerous. Oh, that's, you know, it's going to break down the 3-tier system.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot, cocktails to go became a thing almost everywhere.
Yep.
Pretty quickly.
And yeah, and it's like, it's sort of, cause as you know, once Prohibition ended,
mm-hmm.
you know, each state had its own bizarre set of rules.
Exactly.
I mean, I have friends who, you know, a friend who's a rum collector. So he, you know, flew to the East Coast, bought his rum in one state, then drove it across another state so that he could ship it back home to California, you know, just crazy things like that. And there's part of me that's wondering if there is a recognition, there may not be as much action as those of us. I own a bar. Fortunately, we have food, so we never had to shut down. But, you know, we could do the to-go things. And actually, we're a female-owned bar, so we tend to support brands that have females running them in some way. So we've carried your whiskey. We have had it there. But during this time, I feel like these opportunities that have opened up have shown the people in government that, look, these businesses are surviving with this. And some of them might actually say, well, maybe we should just keep it. You know, like New York, I think Oregon, did Oregon legalize the to-go, or was
Oregon
it Ohio?
Did, so. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, some have made it for when pandemic is over, in the after times, that will still be a thing. You can still get drinks to go. It won't be New Orleans as the sole carry cup anymore. But
well,
I know
you
that
know, and it's always been a silly thing,
it's,
too,
yeah.
Because, you know, in Virginia, for instance, I mean, we would have, there's a little town near us that would have their Oktoberfest, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you know, when you go to an Oktoberfest in Germany, you can get your beer and you can walk the streets and shop and walk with your family. And
the first time I went to Germany, I was on the bus watching people drink beer on the bus. And I was like, what? No. Oh, you can just take your beer anywhere.
But because Virginia says, if you want to drink your beer, you have to do it in this tiny little space. So what do people do? They chug it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that then they can go walk around.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the opposite of what you want people to do. You know, it's like you want to make it so that people are chill. And, mm-hmm. you know, so it has helped, I think, you know, the kind of streetscape dining.
Yeah.
Honestly, isn't it lovely to have outdoor eating? I mean.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're, you know, I've been hearing so many people talk about it, and I was saying, you know, why shouldn't this be a thing all the time?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what sticks when things start coming back to what, we hate saying new normal, but, you know, things are going to change. And what kind
absolutely.
Of things that, you know, our creative minds came up with during the lockdown, what kind of things will stay because they turned out, it was a surprisingly wonderful development, you
right,
know, out
right.
of that.
You know, making things less car-centric.
Yeah.
And, you know.
I live in LA, things. Man. You know I'm down for that.
Oh, I know. Exactly. But like, you know, we brought our son up to New York because he's at school in New York. And it's like, you go around and all the restaurants have at least a little space where they can have outdoor dining. Mm-hmm. And you think, gosh, you know, this is really, really nice. Mm-hmm. It's like being in Europe where they have all the time outdoor dining. Mm-hmm. And
it's great.
Like, why not?
It's great. Well, we've actually talked for like 40 minutes here about
this
all this stuff. I told you. I told you it would be easy. Well, there was one other thing about the Distillers Association I wanted to get your thoughts on, because I know for some of those small boutique brands, you know, that are out there that can, you know, that sell, like, for example, you know, your riser sold at a place here in Los Angeles that in the holiday season I work at called Barkeeper. Love this place.
Oh,
you
yes.
know, you know, Joe?
I love them.
Yeah, totally. That's, yep. I love it so much, even though I'm usually working way more than I should all year round. When the holidays roll around and Joe calls me up, he's like, hey, Mo, you want to come work at Barkeeper for the holidays? I'm like, yes, I will take days off of my day job to come hang out with you guys because it's such a great space. But, you know, you guys sort of rely more on people learning about you from these little bottle shops. And bars that might be using you, have you on the menu and all of that stuff.
Yes.
So during this time, you know, how are you guys getting your names out there? It must be much harder, you know,
absolutely.
Definitely relying
and
on your community.
What has been incredible is 70%, you know, when you look at your on-premise sales of a brand, it's down by 70%.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because even our best bar partners, they need margin.
Yeah.
And,
no, exactly.
And we get that.
Yeah.
Do what you got to do. Stay alive. We're going to be here when
things
get better.
Before the pandemic, we always had probably 50-50 split of female-owned, operated, femme-forward, we always called it, because sometimes it would be the distiller, you know, brands, because we wanted to highlight women in the business, women in the industry. Say these are women-owned brands, because one day that won't be a weird thing. But right now, it's still a small number. But like you're saying, we can't now.
No,
you know,
you can't,
we just can't.
Because you've got to keep your doors open and your lights
on.
And that's a big deal because the default way for most small brands to start in a new market was, I'm going to work the on-premise really hard.
Exactly.
And that's going to drive demand to the off-premise. Mm-hmm. And that's in it's a less expensive way to kind of go out and try to make inroads.
Yeah.
And that's not possible anymore. Mm-hmm. So what do you got to do? You've got to
ship.
You have to spend more money as a small brand, mm-hmm. and you have to get, you know, reps to go out, and you have to go and start working liquor stores, and mm-hmm. you have to, you know, build support in, mm-hmm. and you have to, the hardest part right now in a lot of places is that the tastings have gone.
Yeah. They've gone away. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're doing virtual tastings now.
Well, you know, then, so what do? You go, okay, you know what? We're going to go and ship a bunch to somewhere and make them do 50 mil bottles. Mm-hmm, now we mm-hmm. can supply 50 mil bottles. This is something that now reps can leave those somewhere mm-hmm. for, you know, for the, for people at the liquor stores to taste so they could feel like they could recommend something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that's still money too. That's still money.
Yeah.
Too.
And so that costs money, of course, you know, so everything, as far as trying to brand build has mm-hmm. become much more expensive. Yeah. So, you know, there's, that's really why I feel like for the smallest brands who, you know, and I'm not the smallest brand now.
No, you're not.
we have markets all over. Mm-hmm. And so I feel, you know, very fortunate to be where we are, but I recognize that, you know, in my role as association president, that so many people do not have that ability. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the reasons why we're pushing fairly hard for that kind of ability, because one of the things that our, like our DTC, our direct to consumer chair mm-hmm. was actually saying was, you know what? He's like, I'd trade that FET tax break, he said, for DTC nationwide in like that. He said, because I would sell mm-hmm. so much more by doing it that it would be, I could afford to pay that extra tax, you know? And he's like, it's people don't really get it because so many people outside of California don't recognize just how impactful that ability can be. Mm-hmm. And I think that people are becoming more aware of it, and it's also such an educational process. So we did a focus group with a bunch of consumers talking about it. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, random bunch of people. And we were, you know, asking them about their interest in having spirits shipped to them. And they were like, well, you know, maybe if it was cheaper or, you know, it's for shipping free and all this. And at the end of the thing, the way they had structured it was that our DTC chair and our association CEO were able to talk to the group at the end. Mm-hmm. And so they come in and, you know, well, we're the American Craft Spirits Association. We're doing this as we're trying to, you know, find out about direct to consumer for our small businesses. And they said, as soon as they said the word small business, every one of these people like, oh, so you're small companies. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, why you can't ship? They didn't understand that we couldn't do it, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. they thought, hell yes, you should be able to, because we should be supporting you guys and making your jobs easier. And so the narrative that has to drive this really has to be about empowering small business, just like the whole cocktails to go thing. Mm-hmm. And the reason that went so quickly is because it's how do we help our independent bars and restaurants survive. Mm-hmm. You know, it's help you help yourself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's absolutely
Does the government want to collect tax from you? Because they can't if you go under.
Yes, exactly. If you want us to pay for things, we have to have a way to get there. Mm-hmm, and so I think, you know, one of the things that I think it's interesting about, and when you're dealing with legislation, you know, sometimes it's little Game of Thronesy and the retailers and retailers, and then there's the big alcohol companies, and then there's little alcohol companies. But what is really compelling to legislators is, how can I tell this small business story?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's really kind of getting that and trying to then use what resources we have to collect data and do all the other parts of how you put together a coalition of support.
Yeah.
It's been really interesting. You know, I've not been a person who was, you know, connected to politics in that way before. And so doing all this advocacy work has been very interesting for me. And that's been something that it really, getting involved with this association in this way probably changed a lot of kind of how I think about, you know, how these movements are built.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is, it's very, very interesting. And it's been really kind of tremendous in helping me grow in a different way. You know, I'd gone a lot on the technical and learned a lot about whiskey making and all this stuff. And this is kind of like a whole new thing that's been really very interesting in the past couple of years. And, you know, kind of stretching.
For sure. You
know, same thing for a long time. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm going to try to do
something. It's a whole new muscle. Yeah, totally. And keeps your interest, because once you start getting into the legalities of the spirits industry, you just start seeing how insane it is. And it's basically all left. It's almost like, you know, something was shattered after Prohibition and it was never put back together properly.
No,
you know,
no.
It wasn't even put back together.
It was like this cobbled thing.
Yeah.
And then when we were doing the sanitizer, oh my God.
That was so, when I was hearing about those fines and stuff, I'm like, are you kidding me? Thank God they stepped back on that quickly, but.
It was so crazy. I mean, we were like reading, we're getting this FDA guidance, and we had a team of probably a dozen of us that were like our COVID task force. Mm-hmm. And so we would break down, you know, okay, what do we need to do? We need to work on this issue and that issue. And a lot of us were doing, like, the FDA was putting out new guidance like every couple days. Mm-hmm. And what is so difficult about dealing with it, because of course it's an over-the-counter drug. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to make sure that our members aren't going to screw this up, right? You don't want this to not work. And then, oh, these small businesses have killed four people because they did the wrong thing, right? Yeah. So we really were like reading everything and producing education and like, oh, now you have to register with the FDA. Well, it's interesting because guess what? If you go into the FDA website, it's like there's no English there. It's all acronyms and everything is, we were just going through it and being like, what does this mean?
It's a whole other language. Yeah.
That's government speak. Webinar we ever had was, we had over 300 people here. How to register for the FDA in plain English.
Oh, my God.
And we're like, this looks like this. You fill in these things.
Oh, my God.
It's like, this doesn't make any sense, but you're going to do this too.
Well, you know, one thing that I like about, I shouldn't say one thing I like. There are a lot of things I like about everything that you're talking about right now. But I think the main thing that I'm taking to heart is this camaraderie, this, you know, the community that there is in this small, in this spirit, small business world, but in hospitality in general. I mean, it just seems like in the spirits industry, beer, wine, spirits, bars, there does always seem to be this very strong sense of community within it and people helping each other, people getting, you know, getting through, especially now during COVID. So many people are out of work. So many people are struggling, but everyone's still helping each other during this.
It is. You know, I told someone once, they are asking me, what was the most surprising thing about changing my career from, you know, being in the regular chemical engineering industry to, you know, spirits? And I said, you know, it has been the greatest privilege that I have had was to start to really get to know hospitality people and see, I said, you know, hospitality people see all the civilians out there, usually not at their best.
Oh, mostly not at their best.
And deal with it with grace and, you know, and they put up with a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the system is not set up in an equitable fashion at
not
all.
At all. Not at all.
I said, but yet they're amazingly talented, brilliant people. Mm-hmm. And I said, it kind of is funny in some ways when I talk to people who aren't in this industry, and they don't really get that.
No.
And it's just
because they've never done it.
Very funny.
They've never done it.
No, it's like, oh, you'd be a waiter, and it's like, you don't know waiters.
No. They're,
it's amazing. They're amazing people. You just need to get to know some people outside your little place.
Yeah. I've always joked around, like, years ago I used to say, you know, and I've never worked as a server. I've worked in retail, but I've never worked as a server, you know, or a bartender.
Different.
Retail's its own beast. But I always used to say, man, if I ever became president, I would mandate that everyone had to work at least 1 year in a customer service job. Some kind of customer service job. And, you know, I almost feel like hospitality. I'm like, I think people might become nicer to each other if they did that.
Yeah, I think they would, because it's, you know, like our son is, he was working as a server for a few years. And we were like, it's tough, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's tough.
And we have, you know, friends our family who would be like, oh, you know, well, and you'd sit there and you'd see her sit there. Well, she didn't come fast enough with my, you know, and I don't
with my breadsticks.
Like, be like, oh my God, stop. Just stop.
Right? Not everybody has guar on their side. So
not everybody. You put those in we were laughing, we were talking about it, and someone said we should have a team go to the guar concert. Back out there, and our my husband's assistant general manager is like, I want to go in the meat grinder.
Perfect. Well, on that note, we probably should wrap this thing up.
That's absolutely true. We can talk forever.
I know. But once you talk about going into a meat grinder, I don't know where to go after that. But just let's remind folks, like, you know, where you can buy your stuff. I mean, maybe your website. I don't know if you guys list stores there where you can buy your.
Yeah, not so much. You know, we're in most of the big retailers. We're in about 26 states.
Okay.
You can find what states we're distributed in in our website, and we do have a link to a store in DC that will ship to anywhere that they're allowed to ship to. So that's a way to kind of look out there.
There you go.
If you're in somewhere where we're not currently distributed.
And what is the website?
It's Catoctin Creek, all Catoctin one Creek. Word. So CatoctinCreek.com.
Catoctin.
Yes, there. Catoctin.
Woo! Catoctin Creek.
And I can't wait until we get out of COVID and I get back on the road and come and visit people in real life again.
I know. Same. I've got cousins in Virginia Beach now. I know Virginia's a little bit bigger than some of those other East Coast states, but
yeah,
I tend to drive.
Virginia Beach is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I tend to drive. My brother lives in New York. I've got family in Pennsylvania, and then I will drive down to Virginia.
And
Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we're
totally. It can happen once we're allowed to do this sort of thing again.
That's right.
And should people follow Instagram or anything like that?
Yeah, it's all Catoctin Creek on Instagram and on Facebook and all these other platforms. God knows there's new ones all the time. I can't keep
Well, perfect. Well, don't go yet, but thank you so much for doing this.
Absolutely.
Turn around. Every now and then I get a little bit lonely and you're never coming around.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit tired of listening to the sound of my tears.
Turn around.
Every now and then I get a little bit nervous that the best of all the years have gone by.
I really am so looking forward to being able to travel again, and I don't know how I'm going to be able to take off enough time from my day job to go to all the places all over the country that I want to go. But I can tell you that Catoctin Creek Distillery is one of those places on the list. Becky is amazing, and I hope she schooled you as well as she schooled me. I learned a lot from that, and it's really interesting to hear there is a bit of an upside to having everything be locked down. Maybe it'll be easier for us to order alcohol from all over the place when things start settling back into some kind of normalcy. So thank you, Becky, for telling us about your whiskey and about your work with the American Craft Spirits Association. And of course, there's a playlist and you can go listen to it. Head on over to either the Mo Herms Facebook page or the
you know, what is this podcast called? Music and Booze with Mo on Podomatic. And there are links to the Spotify so that you can check out some of the songs that she chose for all of us to listen to. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.